Good evening. This is Mae Bressel. The title of this broadcast is World Watchers. It's broadcast number 761, July the 7th, 1986. I want to talk a little bit about the symbolism of the July 4th celebration, the Statue of Liberty celebration, and what it means, because Ronald Reagan is very rich in symbolism, and the people around him don't waste a moment or a gesture to get certain points across. Of course, the Commander-in-Chief Ronald Reagan was examining his ships. He had Defense Secretary Caspar Weinberger, Secretary of State George Shultz, National Security Advisor Mr. McFarlane. He had and Mr. Poindexter, the former advisor and the current advisor. He had Secretary of Navy John Layman playing a very prominent role in this operation. And it's John Layman who, I've said many times, has discussed publicly how he intends to start World War III. So opening up the harbor to the homeless wasn't as important as demonstrating our power on the sea and the military stance that Ronald Reagan is taking. There was an article, Reagan secure their bed and breakfast at the Rockefeller's home. They stayed at the Westchester County home at the Rockefeller estate, and the account of it in the San Francisco Chronicle said Nancy Reagan decided to sleep away from the center of the action. White House aide said that Happy Rockefeller, who lives at the Pocantico Hills, was very, very understanding about letting the Reagans bunk in with her. Now, Ronald Reagan's ability to run uncontested in New York and have control of the entire state Republican faction came following the death and, I believe, the murder of Nelson Rockefeller, the quick poisoning, the wine that he ingested, the no autopsy, and the quick, immediate cremation of Nelson Rockefeller. And then Ronald Reagan comes into New York without any interference of any kind. So I thought it was really kind of weird seeing him stay, Nancy and Ronald staying at the home of the Rockefellers. Also, I decided last week how Dr. Gross, Elliot Gross, the chief medical examiner from New York, was the one who had ordered the cremation while he was in San Francisco on the telephone of Nelson Rockefeller. So maybe she didn't mind at all what happened to Nelson Rockefeller. Obviously Happy didn't, because he was an embarrassment anyway, but having the Reagans stay there is I thought was a little bit weird. The San Francisco Chronicle and other newspapers also had a comment. Elvises outnumbered the Indians at the festival. While there were 200 Elvis Presley impersonators, there wasn't one American Indian. Well, the American Indians, the Navajos, were being pushed off their land at a big mountain in Arizona. There isn't the gunfighting or shootout that could have happened, but they're gradually being eased out. So they're busy moving, and they can't get to that party. There's another article about the jet setters that cruised along at the party, and of course one of the largest jet setters there was Malcolm Forbes, the publisher, who has just been appointed by Reagan as head of U.S. Information Agency and Radio Liberty and the radio stations from Munich that enter into the Soviet nation or blocks to continue the cold-hot war. Forbes had 120 people on his yacht, including Giovanni Agnelli, the chairman of Fiat. Agnelli is also co-partner of Kissinger Associates, and Henry Kissinger was up there getting his medal, and Agnelli and Forbes and the Annenbergs, close friends of the Reagans, Walter Annenberg and David Rockefeller and so forth, were partying on the yacht and having a big ball, watching, I suppose, all the fruit of their efforts and taxes, as the power of the Navy was very impressive to hopefully it would rub off or make an impression, I suppose, on the Soviet Union. Now, leading the tall ships down the river, the parade of tall ships, was the Coast Guard ship, the Eagle. You might have heard the name Eagle over and over during that particular day. And very early, right after they started sailing, they announced, I think it was CNN that I was watching, that the Eagle was a Nazi ship. And they made the remarks that we don't hide it. We don't think anything of it. It was built by Adolf Hitler and was used during World War II. It was built in 1933 and sailed from 1936 on. And the quotation was, we don't make any effort to hide it. They not only don't hide it, but on NBC, the Today Show, Monday, July the 7th, this morning, Willard Scott, the regular weatherman, was on the on the Eagle. And he was celebrating down there early this morning the 50th anniversary, which would make it 1936, and that's the time when Adolf Hitler used it, so that our four Coast Guard ships were constructed by Adolf Hitler. I'm sure we could make our own ships, but it's probably very important to use the symbolism of the Adolf Hitler ship all these years for our Coast Guard, and everyone knows it was Hitler's. And so the parade began with Adolf Hitler's ship leading the parade. And, of course, the double eagle was his sign of the Nazis using that symbol, the double eagle. The order of the ships going down was the eagle, then the Denmark tall ship, the Argentine Navy, the Italian ship, and the Esmeralda, the ship from Chile sent by Mr. Pinochet that had been used for torture when he first came into office, and then followed that all the other ships. There was one from Mexico with the tall flags, and they remarked that it was named after the last Aztec ruler who was killed by the conquistadors. Now, if you look at those tall ships, the purpose of them was to go around the seas and bring home the gold and the loot and the minerals and the spices and whatever you could get from native populations, and to conquer those areas and move and inhabit them for the various rulers, monarchs. And they weren't used for anything very kindly or friendly. They were used for exploitation and for bringing back to the homeland what you could take from what are the native population. Now, Ronald Reagan gave a speech at the Statue of Liberty, and most of his speeches are pretty much the same, except his conclusion is a little bit daring, considering that Ronald Reagan has no more respect for boundaries, just as he could bomb two cities in Libya. He could overthrow the government in Grenada. He's ready to overthrow the government in Nicaragua. His boundary is the whole world now, and the Congress is not able to stop him, and the Pentagon is getting pretty much what they want, and you can wait where he'll come next or fly, you know, with weapons next. But he has the world where he wants to move, and he can move without too much pressure from the powers that be. He just calls them in and twists their wrists. But the day that he gave the speech at the Statue of Liberty, he talked about the hope that she gave and that she was an inspiration to people who came here. And he said, "We dare to hope for our children that they will always find here the Lady of Liberty in a land that is free." He said, "We dare to hope, too, that we will understand our work as Americans can never be said to be truly done. Our work as Americans can never be said to be truly done until every man, woman, and child shares our gift." So, and then he goes on to say, bring in the biblical, until each of God's creatures stands with us in the light of her. And so he is asking that our work can never be done until every man, woman, and child shares that gift of liberty and freedom. So his role is to make sure to fight the Soviet Empire and try and if he can beat the evil empire, then our work is truly done. But it can't be done until every man, woman, and child is free. Now, you know that address was just for the Soviet Union, because even in this country, every man, woman, and child isn't free, and he was really putting it on. And then, of course, to add to the glitz, he had Henry Winkler hand out an award for Christa McAuliffe's student essay contest. That wasn't necessary with the Statue of Liberty event. There were other people on the shuttle program, on the shuttle Challenger that went down, and he didn't have anything for Judith Resnick, the scientist, the woman scientist. I don't know why a teacher is more important than a scientist, but he keeps pushing this Christa McAuliffe thing. It's fixated in his brain. And so even at this ceremony, there had to be awards for a Christa McAuliffe essay to keep in mind how important the space and NASA are and the dream of being up in space or teaching from space, because being as the planet Earth is getting so polluted and so many problems, they're looking to space. Now, I want to update a couple of articles regarding the Challenger cover-up, the report that I think are interesting at this time. One is from The Guardian called "Bending the Truth So Far It Breaks," and this is by Jonathan Bennett. And the gist of this article is that there was all this pressure to launch. They knew it was too cold, and we've gone into this over and over again. And this article brings up the fact that it was NASA Administrator William Graham that urged Reagan use the annual speech to promote the space program. Now, I mentioned that before, but it's been written up in quite a few articles how Graham said he wrote for Reagan. He suggested Reagan say in quotes, "Tonight while I'm speaking to you, a young elementary school teacher from Concord, New Hampshire, is taking us all on the ultimate field trip as she orbits the Earth as the first citizen passenger on the space shuttle." And the article goes on to say how the shuttle was delayed three times. It was postponed three times. But one of the analysts for NASA, Richard Cook, said the Challenger report is a model of how to cover up for the people who are responsible for the decisions and focus the blame on the little guys. So I bring up the Graham again, like I did before, because he has now been appointed the science advisor to the President of the United States, and he was writing the speech for the horrible event that took place by forcing the shuttle to launch in the cold, and then he's moved into the White House with a better position. Now, there were a lot of reports about William Rogers' confrontation with Senator Ernest Hollings, but I have one that was more complete than any other I've seen from the Houston Post, June the 11th. And it tells how he again questioned the pressure of the President of the United States to people at NASA to launch, because they were going to mention Christ in the State of the Union message. And it was revealed by somebody who suggested that there was, in fact, pressure, that Donald Reagan, the chief of staff of the White House, was behind the pressure. And the confrontation with William Rogers was much longer than was on the evening television or any newspaper I've read so far. And he is arguing with William Rogers, Senator Hollings, about excluding in their report the inquiry into the pressure from the White House. And Hollings said, "Why didn't you ask somebody in the White House if there was pressure?" And Rogers says, "I don't think we should, because the White House assured us, and the president said on television, that nothing like that happened." Well, William Rogers was part of the whole Watergate crew and scandal, so he knows that a president on television doesn't mean anything. And so the subject was brought up again about the rumors of the involvement in pressure. And Rogers said, "You're trying to investigate a paternity suit where there's no baby. It never happened. There's no baby," he said, exasperated. "There's no evidence in this case. If people keep talking about it, and some people out there will say it, maybe there's something to it, and there isn't one scintilla," which I went into that choice of word before. But Senator Hollings said, "The baby, Mr. Secretary, most respectfully, is the explosion of the Challenger. There was a baby," and Rogers yelled back, "That's not the baby, that's not the baby." And Hollings said, "The baby is the explosion." And there was quite a long debate about whether or not to go into this, and Rogers arguing with him. But the dialogue was much more heated than we were led to believe, and it's still an open question. Now, there's another long article in the magazine newspaper, In These Times. These are mailed to me by a friend who sends me articles from The Nation, In These Times, and things that The Guardian, things that I can't take regularly because there's so much coming to the house. And this article was written by a man named Jim Haphy, H-E-A-P-H-Y, from the Bay Area, "Challenger's Trail of Blame." And this is a very important article in terms of where I tried to explain that this was an operation of a military type, that they could test the cold on the solid rocket booster, but they wouldn't be losing anything because it would be a scientific test. And it was a way to get rid of the shuttles, Challenger taking a chance on whether or not it would explode, to go into some other technology and build other kinds of space weapons and systems, because these they couldn't rely on for any length of time. And this article goes back to 1981, where Reagan and the National Security Council established an interagency review of U.S. space policy, and the chairman was Dr. George Keyworth. Now, Keyworth became the head of the science for the White House, acting director, until William Graham was appointed several weeks ago by Reagan. And George Keyworth was the president's, as a science advisor, he, according to this article, is a leading advocate of bouncing ground-based laser beams off gigantic orbiting mirrors to destroy Soviet missiles. And he's one of the people behind these laser weapons to scorch the Earth and to start as an offensive weapon against the Soviet Union, and also was a science advisor to the president. The Keyworth Group consisted of representatives of the Department of Defense, the CIA, the State Department, the Joint Chief of Staff, NASA, the National Security Agency, the Arms Control and Disarmament Agency, the Office of Management Budget, and they were running the space shuttle through its first four test flights, getting ready for their space policy to use laser beams or in orbiting mirrors to destroy the Soviet Union. Then in this article, he jumps to the next date, which I've cited on broadcast, March 23, 1983, the Star Wars speech, which kicked off the Strategic Defense Initiative 2 years after the plan for the ground-based laser beams and attacks against the Soviet Union. And the gist of this article is that the time and effort and money has gone into those particular efforts of the Star Wars and the weapons and the Star Wars, and money was taken away and stripped from the shuttle program and put into these other areas. And he writes that a high-tech missile defense, the SDI, the shuttle managers could be certain that a staggering satellite tonnage would be needed to boost into orbit. So the following January, Reagan dumped a new load of hardware for the shuttle to launch, and he defined it as the number one in his challenge in space in his State of the Union message. And he wanted a permanently staffed space station by 1992, and Reagan sounded more like a space tech junkie, declaring in August of 1984 in the Star Wars speeches in 1983 when he visited the Goddard Space Flight Center that a blend of private enterprise and space-age technology would create a bounty of new jobs, technology, and medical breakthroughs. And he would talk about America's manifest destiny to colonize space before the communists. And this article goes on, no high public official waxed so enthusiastic about space since Spiro Agnew had called for a manned mission to Mars by the end of the 1970s. Now, Reagan at the Goddard Space Center in 1984 was talking about the medical breakthroughs, and not coincidentally, and I was doing broadcasts right after the Challenger, about experiments of medicine with McDonnell Douglas and Johnson & Johnson and working on AIDS and using the space shuttle program for biological testing of whatever kind. We don't know what they were doing. Now, the combination of William Graham from NASA, who's an admiral, to be advisor to the president for science, and working with Lawrence Bogorod of Harvard, who's on the board of directors of Advanced Genetic Sciences, portends a way or a direction that the military is going to go with food, and what they're going to do with food, and how they're going to use medicine in the space station for purposes that maybe are too frightening to ask, because it seems that the combination of officials from NASA and lasers and Star Wars going into science and food can be really scary, considering, say, 200 or 300 articles I have already on the problems of food and the technology of it. And just to reduce it to its simplest terms, it is very scary. Now, Mr. Graham, Dr. Graham, Admiral Graham, not only is becoming the new science advisor and working with AGS and these technology companies, biotechnology, doing genetic altering that affects our food and our environment, but he also is an expert on the greenhouse, and he was cited with testifying before Congress for the investigations of the atmosphere. There were hearings on atmospheric pollution, and the title of one of these articles is Action Urged Now on Warning Trend, Greenhouse Effect Cited. And the article says another decade of research is needed to know how to curb the atmospheric pollutions. The Environmental Protection Agency is concerned. There was a Senate Environment and Public Works Subcommittee, and testifying before them is William Graham, Deputy Administrator of NASA, and Reagan's choice as the next science advisor. He said he would be more comfortable taking definite action when I find the basis of our understanding to be more sound, talking about environmental pollution to the Environmental Subcommittee. But Graham is talking about a subject which connects to Alternative 3, the greenhouse effect and the effect on our atmosphere of pollutants that we're putting into the air, and also the necessity to build space stations, which the author of Alternative 3, the book Alternative 3, claims will also be used for genocide and for reducing population. About 80% of the world's population could be eliminated At the same time, you prepare to cleanse the atmosphere of pollution in so many people. I've done many broadcasts on Alternative 3, just citing a few to show you how important it is. They go back to numbers 380, 381, 384, 387, 393, 394, 395, 405, 406, and 407. The book was written by Leslie Watkins, and it combines the atmospheric pressures that will demand space stations, and also, as I say, the use of these stations by NASA and Nazis that came here from World War II for future genocide. And that is my fear about AGS and some of these companies that are putting altered bacteria into the food that I believe they're testing our immune system. Now, there have been several large articles in the past few weeks. One I have here from the Chronicle, the threat to the Earth's ozone layer. And right now they've discovered a vast hole has opened up in over Antarctica that can let heat through. And down in Antarctica is where many people have written articles. There's a major book, UFO, Nazi Secret Weapons. There's a suggestion of technology, of advanced technology taking place down in Antarctica for these type of UFO and special kinds of weapons that are already developed, I'm sure, but which we're not notified about yet. And they're experimenting, and it seems that a hole has opened that could allow the sun's rays to come through and scorch the Earth, and in doing that, melt the ice, a good hunk of it, at Antarctica, which would raise the ocean about 17 inches, and there's already been programs and discussions about cities that would be erased. Now, the article on the Earth's the hole in Antarctica by Francois Lede begins this way. It says, the arms race need not reach the point of triggering a nuclear winter in order to constitute an environmental disaster. It is one already, even though the missiles crouch unfired in their silos. It is disastrous because it distracts our attention from the fact that continued population growth, worldwide hunger, exhaustion of our resources, and pollution are threatening not just the quality of life, but life on the planet. And they cite the population growth, which is the purpose for genocide, or as Leslie Watkins said, is the purpose for getting rid of so many people and using up the resources. So many born on this planet would be hungry and use up the resources. And so this is the scientific milieu that I'm talking about, is one that controls food growth and farm activity in the future, and I'll cite some examples, and our general health and what we eat, and is a massive way of population control that is not separate from the space program, the Muscle Shoals, Alabama, the Marshall space people, the Project Paperclip scientists that came over from Germany. We see a melding here of the people working in and out of each other's agencies with food and drug, atomic energy, space stations, and the dangerous problem that they cite of overpopulation. There's another story in the Houston Post, June the 11th, is mankind facing extinction? This is about the scientists worrying about the ozone loss and the heat coming through, and I'm sure many of you have seen articles these past few weeks on that subject. Now, getting into the control of food, and because it's directly related to the very people tampering with the environment in many other ways and building weapons and systems that could possibly break through that ozone, we don't know what they're experimenting with. I want to just cite a few articles of the way food would affect us and people that are doing it. Wall Street Journal had a story, this is June 27th, new FMC herbicide for soybean fields bleaches nearby vegetation in 12 states. Now, soybeans are very important. Being a vegetarian, I rely mostly on soybeans, on tofu, and soybean products, and a lot of people who don't eat meat, meat is injected with all kinds of chemicals, do very often eat soybean and soybean products, and now soybean is being so tampered with that it looks like it can be a very dangerous food substance, and that would eliminate a sure protein with minimum fat and maximum protein that's economically very cheap and could feed world populations. Soybean is being tampered with. Now, the article goes on, a new herbicide for soybeans produced by FMC Corporation is drifting into lawns, gardens, fields. As I say, it's covering 12 states, And one of the arguments against advanced genetic science is putting live bacteria in the strawberry fields is how far would the wind carry it and where would it go? FMC is a corporation, a multi-billion-dollar corporation in the San Jose area in California that used to make farm tractors, and now it's gone into army tanks and big equipment for the Pentagon. Now, the name of the herbicide, which is interesting, the brand is called Command, and they claim it won't hurt humans. It doesn't leave a trace in most plants, but on the other hand, they're saying in Indiana now that it's like Christmas in June. The herbicide takes away the chlorophyll, and where this is spreading, everything is turning white. The article goes on, the herbicide has proved unusually prone to evaporation as soybean planting has progressed across the nation this spring. Clouds of the vapor have drifted up to a mile away, turning vegetation white in its path. Now, the corn is turning white, the wheat is turning white, the tulips are pale yellow, and everything is turning a white. One particular person who sprayed his soybean field said the peonies stopped blooming, the ash trees lost their leaves, the radishes and onions turned white, and the trees look like at Christmas time like it's snow. The mysterious phenomenon was discovered in Manone, Indiana, 2 weeks ago, and at the first they thought was the Chernobyl plant that was leaking radiation because of what happened to the vegetation. Then they went on to say that there's been a faux pas in the protection of society, an Iowa farmer said, and now they're worrying about how it's not only spread to 12 states, but one woman was saying the cemetery moss died, the tulip bulbs disintegrated, so it's affecting things inside the ground as well as on top, and it has spread to 12 states. Another article in Executive Intelligence Review called Sudden Death Syndrome says that the soybean crop in 8 states had been hit. So 12 states in the north area have been hit by just this pesticide that they're going to put on the soybean, and in the south and in Kansas or as far north as Minnesota, they said there's nothing known of the cause or cure for the disease. The soybean crop is having sudden death and dying, so that the yield is reduced by 55% from last year. And it's hit Illinois, Indiana, Kentucky, Tennessee, Louisiana, Arkansas, and Minnesota. So 50% of the soybean crop is wiped out by it's sick, and the other is being sprayed with some kind of pesticide designed by the people who make tanks and military weapons for the Pentagon. The Texas Observer had an article on pollution of insecticides, pesticides, titled Biotechnology and the Transformation of Nature by Leela Levinson. And this goes into the fact the expose of two Texas schools, Baylor and Texas A&M, they inoculated pigs in central Texas with genetically altered virus. And the release of the genetically engineered organism could go into the air. They weren't considering that. They didn't get any permission from the federal government. They were secretly administering these tests without anybody knowing it for 2 years. And the head of the test, Dr. Saul Kitt of Baylor, said he didn't seek approval for the field test because neither he nor his colleague, Dr. McConnell, considered the vaccine to be a genetically engineered organism. Now, the gentleman at the head of Baylor, Saul Kitt, who went ahead without permission to do this, is on the board of a company called Novogene, and 50% of the royalties of Novogene would go to the Baylor University as this product is manufactured and put into more animals and into the field. And Dr. Stuart McConnell, who considered the vaccine to be a genetically engineered organism, is also, he became vice president of Novogene. He left Texas A&M after the school did the findings of the vaccine that they were going to use, the virus, and he became chairman of a company that will make the profit from the experiments, but there is no control on what they're doing. Now, this article is very important because it goes into the history of where the DNA and the genetic altering began, and this is a very good key to what happened to AIDS and the discovery of AIDS at Fort Detrick. The article, there is a direct connection between the universities that are funding this kind of research, the corporations that are putting it together, with the programs in space, with NASA, with the scientists who had direct relationships to others working with genetic experiments, and where it's going to lead, it's difficult to tell, but it doesn't look good because their major concern is population growth and the desire to rid themselves of certain elements in society through genetic experiments. And that's so stated, and I'll cite that in a moment. And they are literally playing God with what we eat and what we are going to bring into the earth and how we're going to live in the future. So given these kinds of people with their daring experiments and no brakes on them, where will it lead and how can they ever be stopped at this point is a question. I don't know the answer. We'll just take a 1 minute break and then get back to these subjects.